Welcome to Necromaniacs Podcast. We're up to episode 5 now.
Wow, where has the time gone, Mike?
Well, you know, it's time's moving faster, I think, these days. You know, it's like accelerating across the cosmos.
Yes, you know? Across the cosmos, Necromaniacs 5. I want to say hello and thank you to the new listeners. We're slowly but surely generating new people out there. And if you haven't already, it's a very low-key page. We're very low-key here at Necromaniacs. It's Necromaniacs Podcast on Facebook. You just look up the whole thing, facebook.com/necromaniacs podcast, and there we are.
We're starting to get more active on that, though.
Yes, thank God.
You know, some trailers and, you know.
No, absolutely. I mean, we're treating it like, you know, like the real deal. I mean, we love horror movies and movies like this, so we want to kind of get that love out there.
Yeah, so, I mean, whenever I see something that's interesting, you know, like a new film or something that's cool or some new, you know, version of a new film that's
coming
out.
Right, exactly, yeah.
I would try to post it on there.
Totally. Know.
So did you go to Comic-Con this past weekend?
No, because it is next weekend.
Oh.
But that's okay. We're leaving this in. This is being left in. We have very busy lives. Sometimes we think things are happening, but they are. We're getting ahead of the game. As of now, I have no tickets, but I'm going to try to go for the Sunday and get tickets like, I don't know, a scalper or something, because the 4-dayer passes were gone like immediately, because it's Thursday to Sunday.
Yeah.
Last year, I went just on Friday and Sunday, because I had the comic store hookup still back
right.
then. But now that the comic store that bought my old store is gone, I am now having to pay for the first time ever to go to Comic-Con in the 9-year history of New York Comic-Con.
I've always paid. I've always just gone to one day, though.
Yeah. See, here's the thing. Saturdays at any convention can be murder, from personal experience. And if you're not super friendly with being inundated with people, you probably shouldn't be going on Saturdays.
That's kind of why I go on Friday.
There you go. Yeah. Right. Friday, Sunday, just like when I go to Chiller or Monster Mania, I try to not go on Saturday, even though sometimes I'm sacrificing some key guests, because sometimes Saturday is the day for the biggest day for guests.
Right.
Well, I know for a fact it is, I think, at the New York Comic Con.
Yeah.
But whatever. I want to go. I like going to the Artist Alley. I like, you know, checking out what's going on. They even always have a good couple of movie companies there, too, selling DVDs and Blu-rays for dirt cheap, which is another cool reason to go if you're into horror movies to a Comic Con. There's pretty much almost always somebody selling some kind of DVD, and they're not bootlegs. They're the movie companies themselves sitting there. So,
yeah, I didn't go last year either. Mm. And this year, just, you know, too busy. Just
yeah.
with, you know, I'm heading out on tour in a couple weeks and just mm-hmm. busy with rehearsal and whatnot. And also money.
Nah, that's the other thing. Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's each day. I don't think it's that much money, but it, you know, it adds up. I think it's like 30 for the day, I think.
Yeah, day passes are not that bad.
No.
If you get the whole package for the whole.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. I mean, and it's also definitely less than, say, the San Diego Con. So,
yeah.
You know, one day I would like to go to that, though. One day.
So what are we doing today, Mike?
Today, it is the, well, not today, this summer was the 40th anniversary of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, a movie that is in my top five, my forever top five, in a lot of people's, it's a lot of people's number one, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Shot in 73, released in 74, without question, holds up today really well. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. One of the things it does not rely on is excessive gore effects.
Nope.
Yet it still creates this very intense atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And the movie's just constantly coming at you, just relentless.
It's a nightmare. The movie is literally a nightmare. I mean, from kind of, you could say almost from the moment it starts, that the camera noise and just the images and the graveyard. And it's just, you kind of, you know you're in for something the minute you see that movie for the first time. It kind of drags you in. And, wow, 40 years. And it's pretty sad. Recently, we just lost the star of the movie, Marilyn Burns, who died about a month or so ago. I got to meet her at a con once. She was as nice as can be. A beautiful woman. She was only 64 years old when she died.
Yep.
Making her 23 at the time of the movie shooting.
Wow.
And 24 at the time of the movie's release. Unbelievable. And to commemorate the 40th anniversary, throughout this summer, the movie has been shown in select cities. I actually found out today that Nighthawk is going to have it October 17th and 18th. Midnight showings. Mike's shaking his head because he's going to be on tour. Unfortunately, Mike is going to miss it. I will be one of those nights. Yeah, they're showing this new print. Just two nights only. I believe it's just two nights only for midnight showings. And all throughout October, John at Nighthawk told me they're going to be doing a lot of cool stuff there. So, on a side note, also to commemorate the 40th anniversary, Dark Sky, who got the rights to the movie, I believe around 2006, they made a steelbook edition that had come out. Very cool indie movie company, Dark Sky. This year put out a four-disc 40th anniversary set called the 40th Anniversary Collector's Edition. And actually, I must say, they have made it for a very nice price, even though it is a four-discer. The first week it came out at Best Buy and Amazon, it was like $19.99. And then I had gone back a week later. It's only been out about 2 weeks, and it was only at $22.
Yeah,
a four disc, two Blu-ray, two DVD set. The cool thing about it is, if you don't have a Blu-ray player, because there's a couple of holdouts out there that don't have one, the two DVDs and the two Blu-rays are identical, so you're not missing the boat on anything for this 40th anniversary collector's edition. For people who don't want to spend that much, there's a slightly cheaper version from Dark Sky with two DVDs, which is literally the two DVDs that is in this collection I'm holding. And there is, for the high rollers, Gorgon Video and Dark Sky teamed up for a $100 super deluxe edition that comes in a truck. Remember the truck at the very end of the movie? And it also comes with an apron, like a Texas Chainsaw Massacre apron. And I believe a poster. And yes, unfortunately, one or two extras that are not on this four-disc set. Son of a bitch. So I was telling Mike earlier, this is my triple dip of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre on DVD. I have the late 90s Pioneer version. I have the 2006 Dark Sky metal book. And now I have my Dark Sky four-discer.
I had this on VHS. Mm. And this is the first digital format that I've actually owned the movie on.
So, very nice.
You know, there's tons of bonus features on there too. You know, there's, you know, a couple of different audio commentaries.
Mm-hmm.
One with Toby Hooper and Gunnar Hansen, and also with cinematographer Daniel Pearl,
who has done some major movies himself.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you know, another one is with production designer Robert Burns and actors and actresses Marilyn Burns, Alan Danziger, and Paul Partain, who played Franklin.
Yes, I met Paul Partain at Chiller in the early 2000s, and then he died a year later. So I have my Pioneer disc signed by Paul Partain, Gunnar Hansen, and I believe Jim Sido is on my disc as well.
And then there's also some pretty cool documentary stuff in there. There's Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Shocking Truth, which is pretty much a production rundown of the film. You know, a little history on the filmmakers, Toby Hooper and Kim Henkel, and just gives you the setup for how they came about making the film, and then, you know, detailing the grueling shoot, the crooked mafia distribution drama.
Yes.
You know.
That's quite a story in itself. Aside from the grueling making of the movie, which all the actors have talked about pretty candidly over the years about just how horrible, quote unquote, it was to make this movie in 100 degree weather every day in the summer. There was some horrible stuff going on behind the scenes as well.
And there's another documentary called Flesh Wounds. There's a house tour with Gunnar Hansen, and then an interview with actress Terry McMinn. Terry McMinn. I almost mispronounced her name there.
Uh huh, McMinn.
But I guess from the top, directed and produced by Toby Hooper. Hooper also co-wrote it with Kim Henkel, and the stars are Marilyn Burns as Sally, Alan Danziger as Jerry, Terry McMinn as Pam, John Dugan as the grandfather. Interesting side note about John Dugan. He was 19 years old when he...
That's right. Oh, my God.
So he had to, exist in that intense makeup job.
Oh, and I got to tell you, seeing that for the first time, I think he was the scariest thing in that movie for me. When I was a kid, when I saw it, I was like, what the hell is that?
William Vail as Kirk. Paul A. Partain as Franklin. Probably one of my favorite characters, actually, just his over-the-topness. Edwin Neal as the Gibby Haynes-like hitchhiker. Jim Sydow as the old man slash the cook slash the proprietor. People refer to him with a bunch of different, you know, names. And of course, the sublime Gunnar Hansen as Leatherface.
Side note on John Dugan. Apparently, while putting the makeup on, he decided that everything had to be done in that one time, like one session, one night, because he absolutely refused to go through the process ever again. So that night was a night, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. That's what I gathered, too.
Holy crap.
They talk about that a little bit in the
documentary. And it was over 100 degrees inside the house and outside the house.
For any of you guys who have never been to Texas in the summertime, it's everything that they say it is, you know, and that bullshit about it's a dry heat. That just means that it sucks all the water out of your body and turns you into this like shriveled husk in like less than, you know, a minute's time, man. But originally this was movie was marketed as a true story, you know, it was inspired by, you know, the Ed Gein story. It's loosely inspired by the murderer Ed Gein. And around the time of the making of this film, these days, you know, with all this intense gore films, you know, the August Underground series and all this stuff, people are exposed to a lot more intense, you know, gore effects and over-the-top, you know, styles. But back, you know, I'm not taking anything away from Texas Chainsaw Massacre as far as atmosphere and intensity goes, but at the time that this movie came out, there really was not that much like this.
No, not at all. Yeah. I mean, you could say the early mid, excuse me, the early mid 60s movies, the Color Me Blood Red, Blood Feast, kind of, sort of, but not really. I mean, those movies were straight gore movies that this movie was not. To me, this movie, I mean, the closest things to this movie hitting in 74, you could almost say, was like a Rosemary's Baby a few years before, or like The Exorcist a year before, at the levels of like intensity, not gore or violence per se. Well, no, there's a good amount of violence in.
Yeah, there's a lot of violence in it, but the graphic nature.
The vibe, probably almost the first of its kind with that vibe.
Yeah,
very possibly.
What comes to mind is, I mean, of course, there was Night of the Living Dead, which came out a couple of years earlier, which is another groundbreaking film, and then maybe Last House on the Left.
Right.
Because of the lack,
which is the same year,
the lack of supernatural elements.
Yes, yes, yes.
You know, you got a bunch of maniacs in, you know, whatever, where were they at? In like Goshen or something like that in New York.
Well, then, I think we're looking at the early 70s is the birth of this real new horror, the birth of modern horror. A lot of people say it kicked off in 68 with Night of the Living Dead. And yet, I mean, this movie is kind of a cousin to that movie, sure. It's a few years later. It's directors who are around the same age. They're in their 20s. They're new underground directors, a part of this new wave of horror. So this is definitely the birth of new horror. You know what I'm saying? I think it is.
And there was some real horror, not even a couple of years prior to that. There was like the Manson murders.
Yeah,
you know,
no,
68,
all this
69.
Came, exactly.
You know, Vietnam was still happening. Mm-hmm. So there was like, you know, people coming back home, you know, dismembered and all fucked up from the war.
Wow.
You know, just that bad taste. So there was like a sort of atmosphere of unrest at the time this movie was released.
Speaking of Vietnam, actor Edwin Neal, who played the hitchhiker in the movie, was said that filming the dinner table scene, quote unquote, was the worst time of my life. And I was in Vietnam.
Oh, shit.
With people trying to kill me. So that's how bad it was, quote unquote. Isn't that the best line? And the reason being, everyone smelled rotting food. Just add all of the chaos that was going on in that scene in that time up, and that is what you got on camera. Man, that is part of what makes this fucking movie so great, I think. Right, Mike?
Absolutely, yeah. There was some realism.
It's just, I mean, it's a movie. There was a script. No one was being killed, but everyone was suffering.
And it comes
and
across.
It came across. Exactly.
Totally.
You don't really hear much like that about horror. I mean, you don't hear too much about that nowadays. I mean, I'm sure there were movies back in the day. I have a funny feeling making The Exorcist was no walk in the park. I know for The Shining, they treated Shelley Long, Shelley Duvall, like garbage. I know that. I know people have had bad experiences, but the experiences the actors had in this movie sound just like another level.
What do they do to Shelley Duvall?
Well, Jack Nicholson and Stanley Kubrick were really mean and nasty to her throughout the film, and to get that tortured performance out
you think
of her.
You, yeah, it was mainly just that sort is, of like method
true,
acting.
True.
I think.
Yes,
yeah.
Method acting times 10. And I guess you could say Kubrick was being a method director. He was just nasty to her and like short with her and kind of mean to her. Yeah, interesting.
We got a couple fun facts here along
sure.
the lines. Fun fact number one: John LaRoquette from Night Court was
yes.
actually the narrator. In
yes,
the beginning.
I knew that. I knew that.
I didn't know that.
It was just for him. It was voiceover work for a movie. Like I remember him hearing about it. He was doing voiceover work. And this just happened to be one of the things that came across his work day, I believe. Pretty crazy.
Fun fact number two is that Gunnar Hansen was not the first choice to play Leatherface.
I think I heard that once.
Yeah, there's some other guy.
Hmm.
And then when they that guy turned out to be a drunk, so
wow.
they got Gunnar to step in, and I think he did a fantastic job. You know.
I found out an interesting fact about the movie, the mafia angle. If you remember on the film, and I even think on the box at some point, Bryanston Distribution Company. I remember seeing that name, and that company was operated by Louis Butchie Periano, who was indeed a mobster and who also had something to do with the behind the scenes of Deep Throat in 72, which is another movie that made the mafia a lot of money. And the production received only enough money to reimburse the investors and pay the cast, here it is, $400 a piece.
Oh.
That's it. $400 a piece.
Well, this leads up to our next point here,
mm-hmm.
where the budget for this film was $83,500.
Which in 1973, when they were making this movie, for an indie movie, that's a nice budget. It's not a ton of money.
Yeah.
It's a budget to make a movie in to make a small movie in 1973.
However, the gross was close to $31 million. Okay.
In 70s money,
which is
$30 million in 70s money is well over $100 million today. It's got to be.
Yeah. Definitely. So, in that documentary, the truth behind Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the shocking truth, they talk about that, how, none of the actors really got any they didn't get compensated very well
no,
for this stuff.
No, for many years. New Line managed to obtain the rights to Texas Chainsaw Massacre from the bankrupt Bryanston Films and then paid the cast and crew as part of the purchase agreement. But I heard that that money was kind of nothing as what was... not what it should have been either. So they got a little more money years later, apparently. Crazy.
Yeah, so, in addition to going through, like, this, these, like, what, 16-hour work days or whatever, and, like, dealing with rotting food and, 110-degree, weather,
wow.
They didn't get paid anything.
I kind of liken that, Mike, as being musicians, to playing a bad show in the summertime in a hot club. Just picture, picture the show is bad. There's not a lot of people there. The sound is bad. There's no air conditioning in the club. And you get paid crap money. Picture that times 10 for many days on end. And that's probably what Texas Chainsaw Massacre was like.
Yeah.
That's my empathy for that. I get it. Like, I've played shows in horrendous temperatures before, actually, in horrendous places. But after I'm done, I'm always like, oh, man, I'm so glad that set is over. But for these people, this was going on for like a month.
Did anyone from this, any of the actors ever really go on to do anything else after this?
That's the thing. Technically, no. And that is kind of, they all continue to be actors. I mean, but as far as anything of prominence... not really, I'm going to say no. I mean, Gunnar Hansen's been in a bunch of small horror movies, basically.
Yeah.
And, but it's funny though, I'll say this. He has made a career out of this one movie.
Yeah.
The man is a beloved man. And I've met him twice. Couldn't have been nicer the two times I met the guy. So it's kind of this weird, it's weird how life can play out like that. He's in a movie that he was grossly underpaid for. Yet he is world known for.
Yeah.
And really has made a name. And made, let's be honest, he's made some money at 20, 30 plus years of conventions.
Yeah.
You know, but I do feel for the fact that they kind of got ripped off, though. I mean, absolutely, you know. But, yeah, you could say that this is probably his biggest film, Gunnar Hansen.
Jim Sydow, I feel like I've seen him in other movies, but I think I'm wrong. I think that he looks like another actor or something like that.
Well, you know? Gunnar Hansen had a small role in the, I didn't like it, Texas Chainsaw 3D from 2013.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't really too into that. He was in a movie from a few years back, 2004, Chainsaw Sally, that I saw, you know, a low-budget horror movie. He's just been in a lot of low-budget horror movies. He's in Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers from 1988, which is semi-popular. He's, you know, the stranger in that movie. But I think, I mean, yeah, this is the movie that, you know, made his life, you could kind of say, you know? Yeah. And maybe that's not so terrible.
Yeah. In my opinion, this is the only Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie, man.
You know what? I've heard other people say that.
Yeah.
I like part two a lot, actually. It has a charm to it.
Yeah, I didn't get
it. And it's kind of got a sick vibe, you know? And it's got a little bit of a comedy to it. Bill Moseley, I think, is very good as the steel plate in that movie. He's pretty great. A lot of people didn't like the Leatherface in that movie.
No. I didn't like it one bit.
Which I can see that. It's not the same. It's not as intense, you know? And it's got a little bit of that 1986 camp quality to
it.
Yeah,
like Return of the Living Dead or something like that.
Right,
you know, it's
yeah.
Like, which is not bad, but not really. I mean, Return of the Living Dead I love, but I didn't like it as injected into Texas Chainsaw Massacre, that kind of humor.
Right.
Really.
I mean, yeah, I just feel like people fondly, I think, remember Bill Moseley. And, of course, when he came out in the Rob Zombie movies, House of a Thousand Corpses and Devil's Rejects, I almost feel like that made people kind of remember Texas 2 again, right? Like, and people kind of revisited it, you know? And it got a little more legs.
These remakes are never needed to happen, though.
Yeah. I did not. I watched Texas 3D. The only interesting thing about it is that it's literally the only movie to be an actual follow-up to the first one. Because you know the second one, they change shit around, obviously.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like a different story.
This one, they had the rights, all the ducks lined up,
uh-huh.
So that, like, legally and on paper and in the script, it is a sequel to the part one. That was the only interesting thing about the whole goddamn movie. The movie itself was not very good.
Did you see Texas Chainsaw, like the most recent?
That's the one I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
Yeah, Texas Chainsaw 3D, was, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's an exact...
That is the only one.
Okay,
yes,
yeah, that was
is
a 3D
an actual
one.
Sequel, yeah. Okay. It's not very good. It is not...
I didn't like it. I saw that on iTunes.
I don't like the way Leatherface looks. See, that's the thing. I don't like the way Leatherface looks in any of these movies except for the first one for some reason.
The one little fun fact regarding this here is, you know, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 featured Matthew McConaughey, right?
Oh, no, the third one
the
did.
The third one, sorry.
Yes, that's right. It did, yeah, great.
This Texas Chainsaw movie, the girl in it with the black hair is actually the Woody Harrelson's side action in
that's right.
In
yes,
True Detective.
Yes, yes, yes.
So there's a little bit of synchronicity there.
Yes. And we found out this week, well, America found out this week. It looks like season 2 of True Detective will be out next summer.
Oh.
Yeah, it's going to be a little while, probably like late summer. The filming is going to start like now, basically. And of course, you know, it's going to be a new story, unfortunately. No, we're not getting a sequel yet to that great first season.
Oh, man.
But I got to never say never, though. You never know.
I mean,
that did so well. I mean, Jesus Christ.
Some people are like talk some shit about the choice of actors, and I just have faith in Nick Pizzolatto's writing.
Yeah,
you know,
no.
I don't care.
Look, Vince Vaughn. I don't hate Vince Vaughn. Look.
No, nah, man. I think
Vince Vaughn, okay. People think he's kind of douchey, whatever, or too comedic. I don't know. I say give it the benefit of the doubt. This isn't a comedy show. This isn't going to be any.
No.
I mean, this is True Detective is going to be True Detective, I think. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's got the same people involved behind the scenes. That is really, you know, what really counts to me. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, have you ever really seen Matthew McConaughey like that in any film?
Nope.
No. So, I mean, there you
exactly
go.
Exactly.
Maybe this
right.
is going to be put
oh,
Vince
people
Vaughn
were left.
That.
You know what's funny? When I first heard about it, I went, True Detective, Matthew McConaughey. is that a comedy? Like, I didn't even put it exactly. Like, I thought, Woody Harrelson, what is this? This is going to be a serious show? I was like, I had no clue what it was going to be. And boy, was I fucking wrong.
Well, I'd recently seen, prior to that, True Detective Onslaught. Like, I'd seen Woody Harrelson in Rampart.
Yes, that is a great movie.
And that kind of primed
me up.
He can do
drama.
He can
definitely do drama. Woody Harrelson can do drama. Absolutely.
Yeah.
That was a cool movie.
But people were tripping out on the fact that, you know, we got the Irishman there. What's his name? Homeboy there. With the eyebrow.
Yes. Oh, it's so bad. I love how bad we get at this, but it's okay. What do you call it? No, I don't really mind him either, to be completely honest. Colin Farrell.
Colin Farrell, yeah.
I don't mind him either. I actually think he's a pretty good actor. He's definitely can do serious movies.
Yeah.
So as of now, no beef. I have no beef with the cast right now.
I'm just like open because I know how good the first season was. Mm-hmm. And you know, they could have Mr. T in there and I think that he
right?
would be great.
I don't know. I think it's going to be awesome.
It could be like Carrot Top and Mr. T. And I think that the writing will overcome that obstacle.
Yeah, it's going to take a lot to take that great taste out of my mouth from season one.
So at this stage of the game, I'm pretty sure everyone that's listening to this has seen Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
I think so. If you haven't, you may have some problems.
Yeah,
you must see the first one. You must see it. You have to see it. There's no way around it. You have to see that movie. So verdict on the 40th anniversary, four discer, get it. It's literally like $22. It's definitely worth the double or triple dip, in my opinion.
What's your favorite scene in the movie?
My favorite scene in Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It's kind of a toss up between the ending scene, mm-hmm. which I love the ending scene of Marilyn Burns in the truck getting away, screaming and then laughing. And or a toss between that or the very first appearance of Leatherface opening up the door and bashing what's his name in the head. That might be really my favorite scene. And the creep music in the background that's playing, like that minimal kind of like in the background that's playing, and like you hear some other kind of like ancillary noise,
yep.
and then you just hear him being fucking whomped in the head. That is probably one of the greatest scenes in horror history, in my opinion.
The first time, that's my favorite scene, mm-hmm. and as well.
And the closing of the door.
Yeah, the closing of the door is what fucking got me, man. When I was a young kid and I saw that, I was like, oh my God. Like, what? Like this monstrosity appears out of nowhere, smacks this guy in the head with a hammer, and then just slams the door. And I was like disturbed by that deeply. And the fact that the girl is just like, you know, like just outside when that happens.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's things like that that really make this movie, like, effective, I think. You know, is the proximity and
The 2004 movie didn't do it. The best thing about it was just how hot the chicks were. That was probably the best thing about the 2004 one. It didn't have the vibe. It was supposed to take place in the 70s. It looked like the goddamn modern era to me. I mean, it was too slick. It was too good-looking. I mean, it didn't do anything for me. I do hear that the sequel to that, which is a prequel of sorts, is supposed to be better than that one. I didn't even see that. That's how much I dislike the 2004 version.
They should stop fucking
see
with it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, my other favorite scene is obviously the dinner part, but specifically when they're trying to coerce the grandfather to doing the kill.
Oh, my God, you know? Yes.
It's so uncomfortable. And the best part about it is that he doesn't kill her.
No. Oh, she's
gone.
Oh, yeah.
He's like...
Yeah,
they're putting the hammer in his hand.
This is it. Yeah, you think she's got...
And he doesn't kill her, nope. but he hits her in the head a bunch of times.
She's alive, yeah.
And she still lives. It's so... I still get uncomfortable when I watch
and knowing what we both know about that scene now, it makes it worse.
Yeah. You know.
Knowing how, like, everybody was fucking losing their minds during that scene.
Yeah.
And it was so hot, and it reeked, and it was just... It was almost like it was real. It was just unbelievable.
And the whole other thing, and this is some of my favorite things in horror movies like this, is how almost avoidable this whole thing could have been. How if they didn't pick that motherfucker up on the, you know, that Gibby Haynes motherfucker, if they didn't pick him up on the street, none of this would have happened.
That's true. Yeah.
No, they didn't. Nope. Why are they going to this fucking place? Who cares? Why are they going to this goddamn middle of nowhere place in Texas?
It's like a million degrees out. Yeah. They're stuck in a van. Let's pick up a hitchhiker.
Yeah, let's pick a hitchhiker up. Let's like, you know, let's go exploring. Yeah, let's find this house. Like, fuck that.
Our friend's in a freaking wheelchair.
Yeah.
Get the hell out of there.
Exactly. You know, and that's, but they didn't. And they ended up, everyone ended up getting killed. Right. Yeah. And that poor young girl is like traumatized for the rest of her life.
Yes.
And similar to, you know, the Night of the Living Dead's, mm-hmm. you know, there's no great real endings. No real resolution.
No resolution, but a great ending, but no, it's not cut, it's not cookie cutter. It's not like here it is. It's like, well, we don't know what's next. Like,
yeah.
We don't know what's next nope. ending. Sometimes I love those endings.
I think that was a new thing at that time, though.
You know? Yes.
That's where the similarity to Last House on the Left sort of like, they sort of like part at that point because, mm-hmm. you know, in Last House on the Left, everyone gets their comeuppance.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
True.
There's like justice served, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And in this film, it's just a day in the life of a man. Like that probably happens every day with those fucking people.
The villains come out pretty good, actually. Yeah. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Yeah.
The only guy who didn't come out well is Gibby Haynes, who got run over. But,
that's
but
right.
The,
for the most part, the family's is all right. Yeah, pretty crazy, man.
They probably, you know, and that also, you know, at the last this last time I watched it, you know, when I got the Blu-ray, I was thinking about how that probably was a pretty typical day for them, really, if you think about it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, you know, got some hitchhikers.
They were definitely already eating people, so yeah.
And it makes me wonder if they're actually, you know, how that the hitchhiker guy got killed, how there might have been other people in the family, too, that easily could have met a similar demise.
That new one explores that a little bit, because like I said, it is a sequel to that family, and there's a baby involved. It explores that a little bit. Again, too slick, too overproduced, too crappy. Yeah. Just leave the Texas franchise alone. Just leave it alone. We're done.
So I give it a 10 stars out of 5.
Out of a possible 5 stars, I give Texas Chainsaw Massacre a 10. I mean, literally, there's nothing wrong with this movie. Which begs to see, here's the thing, though. A lot of people feel like this is Tobe Hooper's curse, this movie. Because there are people out there that don't even think he directed Poltergeist, by the way. People think Steven Spielberg directed that movie. Or Steven Spielberg stepped in and was the main director of that movie. Which, I got news for you. Sometimes I think that myself.
Huh. Okay.
Because people feel like this movie was so good and did so good, and pretty much almost none of his other movies did. Interesting question.
Yeah.
Except
for
Poltergeist.
Yeah.
His other movie, you know, Eaten Alive, Funhouse, I mean, there are no Texas Chainsaw Massacres.
No.
And then the one he did a few years back with Cherry Moon Zombie, Nail Gun, what the hell is it called? I can't even think of it. But, yeah, I mean, people know him for this movie and Poltergeist, and that's about it, really.
Yeah.
But Spielberg, I mean, that could be a whole show in itself talking about that movie. I actually love that movie. But people say that he ghost-directed it. That's one of the things that's floating out there. Yeah. He did write it. Spielberg did write Poltergeist.
Yeah.
And he was present on the scene quite a bit. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe he lent a hand to
Toby. Yeah, no, I mean, it was a huge movie. It was miles above making...
It had real actors in it, and like legit.
So if you put all those things, you line those things up, it's like,
There was no crime family involved in the distribution.
No mafia involved. But that movie's cursed, too. The two young girls died in that movie. Well, one died right before it came out, Dominique Dunn, and then the little girl died in like 1988, Carol Ann.
Before we go any further here, I have to... you know, I've eaten my words regarding The Strain.
Ah, yes, okay. I know. You championed it.
Yeah, I was really hard on it on the last episode.
Mm.
And then, you know, Andrew Summers, a guy on Facebook, friend of ours, you know, he kind of straightened me out. And he was like, you got to check this. You got to give it a chance.
Uh-huh.
So I... you know, waited a few episodes. I got the season on iTunes.
All right.
And I watched like 4 or 5 episodes in a row.
Uh-huh.
And I take back everything I said about
really?
It.
Really?
That pilot episode sucks straight up.
It gets better? Is what
but
you're
it
saying?
Got really
it got
good.
Better.
It's really good. And I'm thoroughly enjoying The Strain. And my only criticism is that it is a very faithful retelling of the story.
It's too much, though?
Well, you can look at it 2 different ways. Number one, you know what's happening, okay?
Okay.
I read the books, and I'm like, you know.
Like Game of Thrones-ish in a way.
Yeah, you know. So if you've read the books, it's like, it's good, but there's going to be no surprises. However, it's still really pretty well done, I think.
So, you know how like Game of Thrones, even if you haven't read the book, books or not, they have changed a few things.
Yes.
So what you're saying is The Strain did not change a few things.
No, the whole plot pretty much goes the way it is in the books.
Interesting.
You know, the same characters, and you know, there's like little nuances that stray here and there.
Right.
But not significant enough where, not like Walking Dead.
Right. Where they really change.
Depart.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful for that.
Oh, me too. Because, absolutely. Otherwise, you'd know every step of the way.
Yeah. You know and what I liked about Walking Dead is how they do have, like, it's almost like they take the characters and they morph them a little bit. Mm. Like, the governor is definitely different than one in the comic books.
Physically and everything, yeah.
You know, and then there's these great new characters like Daryl, and there's different things go on. Like, it's almost like the same thematic, set pieces are in place, but they sort of arrive there differently in Walking Dead. The Strain, unfortunately, is pretty much a direct adaptation of the novels. And that's, like I said, I'm not saying that's bad, but I'm saying it's just, it is what it is. And that's, if you're expecting something that's like a little bit more, you know, I like it, but I'm still talking shit about it.
You're into it.
Yeah, but you know, I give it a thumbs up now. And I misled some people maybe.
Did it finish?
No. There's still a few more episodes left.
Wow, they've given this quite a run. It feels like it's been on for... Yeah. Is it 12 or 14 episodes?
I think it's either 12. I don't know exactly. I think it's 12 or 14. But it's compelling, you know? The vampires look great. Some of the CGI is a little iffy, but, you know, what are you going to do?
Wow. See, and here I thought you were going to be like... Because I know you love the book.
Yeah.
And then I knew that the first episode, you're like, and then it went along and you were like, eh... So it's interesting to see that you've come back and to say that it's got better.
Yes.
And great.
I didn't think you could. I thought I was really turned off by the pilot episode.
Oh, wow.
I saw that pilot. I mean, we talked about it.
Yeah, I wasn't into it. It didn't rope me in.
Awful. And I still don't like it. You know, there are things about it that just were like, my God, this is how you guys are going by doing it this way, you know? But then once the story started picking up, it dragged me in, and I really started appreciating it. And the characters got, you know, they started, I think the actors might have settled into their characters more, and then, you know, it progressed really well, you know. And of course, like the German, you know, guy is great. You know, it's always good to have a couple of Nazi characters in there.
You got to keep people on their toes. Yes.
You know, so that's always good, you know. One of the things that's like unbelievable, though, and I felt this way in the book, is that they had a Mexican gangster. And for those of you who live in New York City, that's not really the way things are here. You know what I mean?
No, there's definitely not Mexicans pulling the strings of New York City. I'm going to say no. Yeah. At least not on any major scale now. I'm going to say that's more of the Russian persuasion in this day and age.
Yeah.
And maybe in some parts of the hood, Italians. But I would say the main proponent of that at this point in 2014 is the Russians. And, of course, the Chinese in Chinatown.
Yeah.
But that's Chinatown. But to have a
to have, like, this Mexican gangster guy. I felt that in the novels, too.
And you're like,
like, interesting.
Really?
You know? Maybe it's because, Del Toro's Mexican. He has to represent.
Yeah, see, maybe that's what he was trying to do. Okay, suspension of disbelief.
Yeah. I'm willing to make that jump, you know. And that's definitely more of like a West Coast kind of trip.
That could be what it is, exactly.
But, yeah, I retract my negative statement about that. I made that, you know. I stood behind that, but, you know, I'm man enough to admit when I should have given something more of a, you know, more chance.
I'm asking for you, Charlie Miller. Come in.
Unknown caller, by failing to identify yourself, you're conducting an illegal radio transmission.
That's true.
II-99RC. There's no caller by that handle at this location. Over.
Mr. Turner, we need to talk.
No, we don't.
It's a bad business.
Which brings us to something else on TV we're going to talk a little bit about, because it's not over yet, and we don't want to spoil too much. It's only... it's going to be an 8-episode run. I think they're only 6 episodes in, and it is on BBC America. It's called The Intruders, or Intruders. I'm sorry,
Intruders.
There's no V.
Yeah.
Intruders. It is based on a 2007 novel called The Intruders. An 8-episode first premiered in, I believe, mid-August of this year on BBC America. And Eduardo Sanchez of Blair Witch fame is one of the directors. Now, I have only seen the first five episodes.
Yeah.
I have not seen the sixth episode. And we were talking a little bit about this before the podcast started. It definitely has an X-Files-y vibe to it. It's very heavy on big conspiracy.
Yes.
But it also reminds me of another show from an X-Files spinoff called Millennium, which was a X-Files even darker cousin.
It had one of my favorite actors, Lance
Henriksen. Yes. And it was literally, you know, self-descriptive about the impending Millennium and how everything, the shit was going to hit the fan. And that was a fun show, actually.
Yeah,
Millennium.
Loved it.
Go back and watch it now. It's pretty fucking great. But the intruders, that's the similarities kind of begin and end there.
Yeah.
It's definitely its own animal. It's almost hard to talk about. I sound like an idiot.
No. I mean, I found out about this. There's a podcast I listen to called Ground Zero Media, mm-hmm. and this guy Clyde Lewis. That has to do with just, you know, straight up conspiracies.
Okay.
Esoteric, like secret government shit, you know, mm-hmm. stuff like that. And it's almost like Coast to Coast in some ways. Huh. You know, it's like, you know, one episode they might talk about UFOs.
And what is that called?
It's called Ground Zero.
Ground Zero. I'm checking that out.
So this guy was talking about this TV show, and I'm like, man, this sounds like right up my alley. It's like conspiracies, you know, esoteric.
Horror, cult.
You know, occult.
Mm-hmm.
You know, possession, like all this stuff. So, I tried to find it, and of course, you know, I don't even have a cable hookup.
Regular cable. No.
You know, I just, all my stuff's from the internet. Mm-hmm. You know, like iTunes or Netflix or whatever. You know, mm-hmm. and so I found it on iTunes and I subscribed to it, and you know, it's only maybe three or four episodes in. So I binge watched those three episodes or whatever, and mm-hmm. I was like, man, this is like it really grabbed me.
Yeah.
You know, and one of the things I like about it, it's like they have no qualms about killing people off, man.
Yes, it is actually way more violent than X-Files and Millennium.
Yes.
BBC America is kind of like FX and AMC. They get to say shit. They get to say asshole.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, do they get to kill. They get to kill like there's no tomorrow.
Yeah.
And it's like R-rated movie violence, basically.
The only really notable actor is Mira Sorvino.
Yes, the lovely Mira Sorvino.
And then there's that other guy who had, I think it's the same actor that was in that Quentin Tarantino film with what's her name there? Jackie Brown.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that guy.
He also, he's in trouble too on that show.
Yeah.
Yes. Hold on. We'll get his name in about 3 seconds.
Yeah, we're not going to give too much away, because I urge everyone out there to check this out in whatever way you can. Maybe, you know, even if, you know, you get it on iTunes, or if you're one of the people out there with a cable hookup, you know, try to find it on BBC America. It's great. And, you know, if you like stuff about secret societies.
Yeah, Robert Forster is in it. Yes.
Oh, that's, he how does can
not
I forget?
He's a great actor. He does not have a huge role, but he has a fairly important role
in
the show.
Yeah, but you know, everyone else, there's people you've never really seen before. I suspect that there's a lot of British actors in it.
There is, yes. The main male, John Sim, who plays Jack Whelan, the former FBI guy, the main guy, he is a Brit.
Yeah.
With his great American accent.
So the basic idea behind this thing is there's like multiple storylines going on. And the common thing that they all share is that some of the people have sort of been possessed.
Mm-hmm.
By, you know, it's really not clear exactly what they are.
It's from what I get out of it is it's a secret society that chases immortality.
Yes. Okay.
It has to do with immortality and like body shaping. So not shape, but floating into other bodies. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Body thieves in a way, you know? And this one little girl who's a main character on the show, unfortunately, is inhabited by one of the most vicious killers on the whole show. And it's just, she does an unbelievable job, actually, portraying this vicious 60-something killer as like a 11-year-old girl.
Yeah, the young girl's name is Millie Brown.
Millie Brown, she's amazing.
She needs to get some sort of award for this show. Because she's probably the one of the top three best actors in the whole show.
The whole show. Really. Oh yeah, it's unbelievable.
But I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh no, I was saying she plays. Her name is Madison. Her name on the show is Madison O'Donnell, but the killer who has possessed her is like this. It's been around for like hundreds of years, and it's been killing and mutilating young children, women, and men. It's just it's crazy storyline.
So you know, so there's these key sort of entities that you know are immortal, and then they manifest different bodies through the course of time. So you know, I believe that entity's name is Marcus.
Marcus, yes, that's right.
But that might not even be his last life, what he was called. So I think that this series is gearing up to really present some sort of, you know, big story that's like operating on more like a cosmic level. You know?
I mean, there are characters that are kind of biting the dust in each episode, and it's definitely getting more and more intense. And the poor ex-cop who just wants his damn wife back.
Yeah, yeah.
Mira Sorvino is his wife, Amy. Jack is the character's name, Jack Whelan. He's formerly LAPD, who's just fallen into this whole crazy-ass world, just trying to figure out what the hell is going on. He doesn't even know what's going on.
He has no idea what's going on.
He has no idea. He's kind of just going at this every day, just like a new crazy thing happens to him. Here's the thing. It's not over yet. We're just kind of teasing the show. We may not want to talk too much about it right now, but it is something cool on TV if you're a horror fan, if you're a fan of shit that's like a little offbeat, you know? BBC America has cool shows, and this is definitely one of them.
Yeah, definitely. I think that once this first season wraps up, we should do a
more proper one. Yes.
A real legit, because I don't want to ruin it for anybody. And I still don't know what the hell's going on.
Yeah, that's the funny thing. We both kind of admit to each other, okay, we're going to talk about this, but we don't really know what's going on. It's not that kind of show. It's not a linear show.
No, not at all.
This time around, instead of as a third segment discussing a movie we've both seen, we decided to do something a little different and each one of us talk a little bit about a movie that only one of us has seen and vice versa. The movie I saw recently was Wolf Creek 2. Now, the first Wolf Creek was from 2005. Actually did quite well. It's an Australian film, did quite well in Australia, did very well here. Kind of came out in the wake of, like, you know, the torture porn, quote-unquote, films. I hate that phrase so much, but it's a phrase that people know. But it had a whole different kind of bent on it because it was shot in Australia. And the first, 60, 70 minutes of the movie is almost like a teen sex comedy, like a road movie with some young teenagers who then fall upon this kind of happy-go-lucky Australian outback guy who, well, turns out to be not so very happy-go-lucky after all.
Well, in some ways, it's similar to Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
In a way.
That's how the movie was sold to me. Like, I saw the first one.
Yeah.
And I went with this girl who was a huge film buff, and she was like, oh, I want to see this movie, Wolf Creek. It's like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, for what I heard. And I thought that was a loose sort of thing, and they also tried to sell it as like a true story too.
Yeah, no, well, The thing is, there was and is a story in Australia about a couple that was found murdered in that same area in Australia, and they kind of, I guess, you know, took liberties and whatnot and kind of turned it into a bit more of its own kind of myth in northwestern Australia. But, yeah, Wolf Creek 1 was from 2005. This movie, the sequel, did not come out until February of 2014 in Australia, and then it made its way here, I guess maybe 2 or 3 months ago. It did actually play in theaters in Manhattan for like a hot minute in April or May. Did not do as well as the first one. Let's just say maybe waiting 9 years wasn't the best idea. Let's be honest.
Also, a lot of people probably didn't even know it came out.
That's the other thing. That's the other thing. Yeah, people, some friends of mine are like, there's a Wolf Creek 2? Holy shit, I love that first movie. But basically, the character in Wolf Creek, the killer, we'll call him, is Mick Taylor, and he is 100% an Outback guy. You know, that remember there was a wrestler in the WWF back in the day, Outback Jack, whatever.
Yeah.
And yeah, picture that, and picture Crocodile Dundee, times about a million, and is a vicious, vicious killer. And that's Mick
Taylor. Isn't Mick Taylor the guy that... The bass player in Duran Duran.
Yes, and Mick Taylor, he also finds like time to be in Duran Duran. Okay, now, I'm going to be honest. This is quite a similar film than the first one. But the biggest change, and it's a positive change, is that it doesn't really do that tremendous build-up that first one had. The first one had a very long build up. You thought you were watching a comedy. You thought you were almost watching like a teen sex comedy, like fucking, you know, that Apple Pie movie, whatever the fuck.
Oh, American Pie.
Yeah, American Pie. Yeah. Like, right? Like,
yep.
But you know, or like Road Trip or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
This one kind of cuts it that down to about maybe 15, 20 minutes, maybe, as a German couple, the first couple that gets offed. And I mean, that's the first couple that gets off. The first two people that get killed are actually two policemen who die very horrifically. And it's the violence in this one is amped up big time. And it is actually also the same director as Wolf Creek 1, which, I mean, having the same director and same actor in the movie, to me, it makes for the better film. Wouldn't you agree?
I think so, yeah.
It kind of keeps everything grounded.
Yeah.
You know, I just feel like, Had this been in different hands, I might not have enjoyed it as much. But I don't know. And some people might look at this as like a mindless, violent, stupid movie. But I got a big kick out of it because I thought that the kill scenes were actually very well constructed. And the acting job by John Jarrett, who apparently is a huge actor in Australia, you know, of like comedies and all sorts of films, who plays this Mick Taylor killer in this movie. Man, you're rooting for him, actually. Yeah, I have to say, even though some of these people are as innocent as can be, you're kind of rooting for him. Like I said, look, it's not brain surgery. It's not psychological, intellectual horror. It is kind of mindless violence, but I think it's done in a way that you're entertained. You're not bored for one damn second throughout this entire movie. That I will say. First one, some people very bored by some of it. No, there's nothing boring in this movie. It is pretty much more of the same. And an ending absolutely leaves it open for a part three.
Which there probably will be somewhere.
Well, here's the thing. This movie, it did not do nearly as well as its predecessor. But again, you never know. Greg McLean is the guy who did it. The movie Greg McLean did after Wolf Creek 1 is the awesome Rogue. Did you see Rogue?
No.
The Alligator?
I don't even know.
Mike, you got to see that movie. It is great.
Really? It's good.
Yes,
I've
it's
seen,
great.
I saw, like, you know, write-ups for it. And
no,
I just
no.
never was motivated
that,
to
that
see
he
it.
He did that next instead of doing Wolf Creek 2. And he's done a few other movies, Greg McLean. But this movie, I have to say, like, if we're going on a 1-5 scale, I'm giving this a 3.5.
Okay.
Because I was nothing new under the sun, but the violence was very interesting. The kill scenes were very interesting, and I was just not bored. It was just like a good kind of a fun dark horror movie to watch, you know. But I think John Jarrett's performance is really what keeps you glued to the damn TV. The guy is amazing. He's funny. He's funny while he's mutilating people. It's just crazy. Like, you know, I mean, while he's chopping up body parts and putting them in his truck, he's actually extremely entertaining. So, Wolf Creek 2, 100% worth seeing if you saw the first one. 100% worth the rental or the Netflix view, etc.
It's on Netflix.
Yes, it is. Yes.
Excellent.
It's currently on Netflix. Wolf Creek 2. Check it out.
See, I didn't even know it happened. You know, I didn't even know they made one. So it's good. I did like the first
one.
No,
yeah. If you like the first, I definitely think people who like the first one will enjoy the second one.
The thing was with the first one, and I kind of thought that the long build up made it more brutal when shit went down.
Yes,
you know? Like similar to Serbian film.
Yeah,
There's like it's like day in the life of like this guy.
Well, that build up though to me was super important though.
Yeah.
To the movie, I just thought maybe the build up in the first Wolf Creek was a little long.
A little long.
Could have cut down a little bit on it. I mean, those characters weren't that interesting. You know what I'm saying? Like we didn't have to keep that long on them before we introduced Mick Taylor. You know.
Yeah. My contribution to this is a film called At the Devil's Door. It's one of those IFC Midnight.
Yes, great title.
Yeah, it is. It came out. It's actually, I think it's out now.
Yes, just came. It's
just
new.
Came out 2014. Mm-hmm. Written and directed by Nicholas McCarthy from The Pact.
Okay, I heard of The Pact.
Yeah, starring Ashley Rickards as Charlene, Catalina Sandino Moreno as Lee.
It is a Mexican film or a Spanish film? What country?
It's American.
Oh, it is. Oh, it's American.
A U.S. film.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
And then that guy, you'll recognize this dude from the River's Edge.
Oh.
Yeah, the guy who plays John.
Oh, shit. Where the hell's he been?
Who knows? The dude's name is Daniel Roebuck.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And he plays this, you know, Chuck.
Who's,
and we'll get to who he is exactly.
Right.
And then also, there's another actor in here that immediately I recognized him. What the hell's his name? Michael Massey. He plays the dude that... he's from the movie The Lost Highway, the David Lynch film.
Okay, he plays Uncle Mike.
Guy with that, like, pencil-thin mustache who gets, he's, like, involved with...
Yes, I see what you're talking about. He looks very familiar.
Yeah, that guy.
He was in Lost Highway 7, The Crow. Oh, okay.
He's
the real creepy guy in The Crow. Okay.
It's like a 90s actor.
Yes. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. So this movie... It had its moments, though typical of a lot of the IFC Midnight films, it never really quite delivered. You know what I'm saying? Like, I like the concepts in a lot of these films, but some of them, there's some missing elements to it, you know? Like, I haven't really ever been fully satisfied by any of these movies.
Kind of like how I felt about As Above, So Below.
Yeah.
We can get to that later.
So this movie starts out in the 80s. And, there's this young girl, she's on vacation, it starts with her making out with this dude on a bed, and then he sort of brings up this thing, well, you know, if you want to make $500, there's this guy who can play a game, like this, like, card shell game, and you'll win $500. So he takes her to this trailer, and that's our guy, Massey, the guy from Lost Highway, plays this creep in a trailer. And he plays this game with this young girl, and then he gives her $500. And basically what she did was she ended up selling her soul. Okay.
Ooh, for that. Oh, wow.
Yeah. So there's a scene where she's at, you know, in her room. She's got headphones on, and she's listening to some, sort of canned music trying to sound like the 80s, you know, like a Susie and the Banshee-style song. But it's obviously someone that's not Susie.
Right, exactly. Copy. Yeah.
And then she gets, invaded by this malevolent demon, and impregnates her.
Ah.
And then she commits suicide.
Demon seed.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So, you know, that's what happens. So, we fast forward about 20 years into the future, and then we have Lee and Vera, these two sisters, and Lee is a real estate person, and she's trying to sell this house. Okay. And this is where Chuck comes in, the guy from River's Edge.
Oh, wow.
He's, it turns out that the young girl's name is Charlene slash Hannah. She has two names. Like, okay. They call her Charlene, but we find out that she actually was named Hannah. Okay. So they're trying to unload this house. There you go. See?
Daniel Roebuck. Oh, that's right.
Daniel Roebuck. They're trying to unload this house, you know, for cheap, because obviously there's some bad shit that happened there. And, you know, it's probably haunted and manifested by this evil entity. So, you know, Lee keeps seeing this young girl, Charlene, in and around the house, you know, in a red coat and everything. So she goes back to the house. She goes through all this paperwork and she finds an article basically describing that, you know, this young girl, you know, committed suicide. Mm-hmm. And so the idea that things were not quite right sort of pops into her head. And then she calls her sister Vera, who has, like, you know, some kind of art show that night. And she's like, oh, yeah, I'll see you. And they have, I'm going to be late because I'm dealing with some work here.
Right,
so, So then she sees the young girl in the house, and then her heart stops and she just drops dead.
Oof. Is that a good scene at least?
It's a decent scene. There's some cool stuff in there. You know, you see glimpses of this creature here and there, and it's kind of interesting. You know, it's cool. You know, I like when you see a guy dressed up in a suit and he's supposed to be a demon or something like that. You know, similar to VHS too. You know how there's like that devil segment.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but it's obviously a guy in a rubber suit, and but there's something badass about that, in my opinion at least. So, you know, now Vera, you know, is sort of in the hot seat. The demon comes and visits her, smacks her around, throws her out a fucking window, and then she goes into a coma for like 8 months.
Oof.
And then it turns out that she's pregnant.
Okay.
So there you go. Mm-hmm. Right. And then, you know, she has a baby, and then we go 6 years in the future.
Huh.
And then the baby's like this creepy little girl, like watching all this, like, you know, disaster footage with like a foster mom. And then lo and behold, who comes for a visit? It's Vera. But this time she has a knife with her.
Huh.
Okay. And that's all I'll go, because the movie really, you know.
Now, somebody on Netflix said it seemed like they fit a trilogy into one movie.
I feel
the
like.
Is it three different parts or eras?
Yeah, there's three different eras. There's the 80s, mm-hmm. and then there's like, you know, say it's like, you know, the 90s or whatever, or 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. And then there's like 6 years later when the young girl is like, you know, starting to manifest her powers.
Okay.
At the end of the day, I really didn't care, man. It was just like one of these things where the movie didn't really hold my interest. I like the idea. I think that they could have developed it into something interesting.
Another person said, and I kind of like doing this in a way because it gives a nice kind of
contrast there. Yeah.
It does. Said that had great atmosphere and good acting, ruined with a very bad ending.
Yeah.
Yes or no?
I agree. The ending was a little disappointing, you know, and it's just like one of those things where they could have really developed this into an interesting story, and I just feel like it didn't go anywhere really for
me. Now, IFC, these movies are funded by IFC, aren't they? They are.
Yeah, so there's real money there. You know?
I was going to say,
like,
so it's not super low budget.
No. And that's what really sort of perplexes me about these IFC Midnight movies is that there's a budget. You know, IFC is like a, you know, they have their own channel on cable.
Put on great stuff, sure.
But And maybe that's why they don't get the horror thing. Because it's like maybe because they, you know.
They should be getting the horror thing down back, but maybe they're not.
I think that you got to be like a little sketchy to like have a good horror movie.
Yeah.
You know, you don't really know where this guy's coming from. And I think that's really the sign of a good horror writer, director, or filmmaker.
Think maybe, Mike, what's happening now is that horror has been on quite a little run for the past 12 years, let's say. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that a lot of new directors and new writers are looking to cut their teeth in this genre. And as a result, there's way too many fucking people cutting their teeth in this genre.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of it is...
I think that's what's happening.
I agree with you. And I think that a lot of people aren't fans of the genre.
Yes.
You know, I mean, you get a guy like Jim Van Bever who...
so many talented people.
Yeah, he should be making an IFC movie. That motherfucker should be... He's like... languishing in obscurity somewhere, and that guy's got way more ideas than any of these people, and he can make a movie with no money.
Yeah, I don't understand it. And like, I mean, geez, give Bill Zabub a budget. He'll come out with something interesting. I mean, he makes movies for $30. He'll fucking... Yeah. I mean, there are directors out there who do love the genre, who are yeah, they're, you know, Bill Helfar. Give Bill Helfar a couple of bucks. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's pretty shitty. I feel like, much like maybe any other industry, the movie industry, the who you knows and the what you do's, and the who is in your bloodline, maybe, or whatever, or, you know what I'm saying? Like, maybe there's just such a glut of, I love horror, and such a glut of, I'm making this horror movie. Like, and it kind of gets a lot of green lights.
And their next movie, but it's like a stepping stone for some people. And I think that, you know, a lot of people talk shit, or have been talking shit about American horror, and it's like, I don't think that there's a lack of talent and ability. I just think that the wrong people get to make movies.
Yeah.
And, you know, cause like I said, I'm a huge Jim Van Beber fan, and he is a, you know, horror, like, genre guy.
The thing is, a friend of mine who loathes Walking Dead and loathes American Horror Story because she thinks it's not real horror. It's horror for people. It's TV horror. It's not even good TV horror, she says. It's just like, it's like fast food horror. I respect that opinion. I don't agree with it. I actually think Walking Dead is pretty good.
I totally agree with that. I think it's great.
And I did enjoy season one of American Horror Story a lot.
And two. I loved season two a lot.
I felt like it just threw it in the whole kitchen sink and lost me. But I get that point of view where it's like this whole TV horror thing. You know what I'm saying? Like, I get it, you know? It's like I'd rather just watch a good real horror movie, or I'd rather even go back and revisit Dark Shadows, for God's sake. You know what I'm saying? I mean, just like, I don't know, I feel like the horror is now, it's getting somewhat the pool's getting a little tainted, a little bit. Not enough to turn me off or anything.
No, because because then you get Intruders, you know, you get, and then you get True Detective, who's like, what is that? Is it a horror movie? Is it, because by definition, you could say it's a horror movie, because similar to like Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
If True Detective, say, was a 2.5 hour movie.
Yeah.
A lot of people would have called it a horror movie.
Totally, because even though there's no supernatural element, in Texas Chainsaw Massacre or Last House on the Left or any of those films.
There's violence. There's a horror vibe on that show that is undeniable. There's a creep vibe on that show that's undeniable. There's atmosphere. The horror made up, out of 100 percentile, I almost feel like horror is about a 40 percentile of that show, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's dark, man.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that's kind of like, you know, maybe the criticism can be made that you know, some of the TV horror stuff isn't dark.
That's the thing.
Enough.
That's the thing.
You know? Yeah. I mean, it's dark compared to, you know, watching Glee or some bullshit like that.
right,
you know, like the Kardashians or whatever. But it's probably, I mean, for people who are into, like, Inside and, like, European horror, it's probably not, you know, nearly as dark as that. But then again, it's not supposed to be. It's like, it's a different type of thing. You know, it's like, you know, if you like Tomb of Dracula, they're going to say that's not a horror movie.
Of course.
Or that's not a horror comic or whatever. A horror fucking comic book. Yeah. But it's not necessarily as dark as, like, you know, Martyrs or something like that.
No, exactly. I mean, look, horror, there's all types of horror, just like there's all types of comedy, just like there's all types of metal, okay? Yeah. But I do think, for some of the more deep-minded horror fans, they can see through some of the shit, the cookie-cutter shit.
Yeah.
And maybe the TV horror of today isn't floating their boat. And that's fine.
I'm glad it's there, though, honestly,
yeah,
for me.
Yeah, I'm glad it's
there. Because I like tuning in, and I like checking it out.
Like, I'm excited for Constantine. Constantine is based on what was probably one of the greatest horror comics of all time.
Yeah.
John Constantine, Hellblazer, from Vertigo DC. I read almost the entire run, 250 whatever issues of that goddamn thing. I loved it. I always thought it could have been something cooler, a movie, a TV. They made a movie that was actually not really all that bad.
Yeah.
It just wasn't really a John Constantine movie. It was called Constantine. It had Keanu Reeves. That movie's actually not too bad. They're now making a show that is more about the comic called Constantine. And my fingers are crossed. What can I say? You know, it comes on in about a week or two. And, you know, the networks all have horror shows now. I think they know what the people want to see. There's so many comic book properties coming down the pipeline, Mike. Hopefully this one is one that sticks. I mean, geez, you know, who knows? It could be a big bomb. It couldn't be. You know, who knows?
I love Alan Moore's Swamp Thing world, and that's what Constantine came out of. And, like, I'm surprised that Swamp Thing isn't on the table.
Yeah, there was that show in the 80s for a while and whatever. I remember that in the early 90s.
Yeah.
They had a show. It was okay. But to revisit that...
In this day and age.
Yeah, it'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, Preacher is sitting at AMC. We're going to see... Once again, there's been no movement on it. That's what happened at HBO. Neil Gaiman's American Gods is going to be on Stars. I believe that is happening. I don't know. HBO has Westworld. Ever seen Westworld?
Oh, the Yul Brynner?
Yes.
Yeah, I saw that.
They're remaking that.
As a series?
I believe so, yes. But there's so many other comic properties. There was a thing the other day about Lucifer.
Oh, yeah, okay.
That Fox, I think, grabbed it. I mean, there's so much going on. But let's be honest. There's good shit out there.
Yeah.
I mean, see what happens, you know?
Yeah, the Preacher stuff, man, especially in today's environment, is to me a no-brainer.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't know how you feel about True Blood. I hated it, you know?
I liked the first two or three seasons. I did.
But
I enjoyed the first three seasons.
If that show could be successful...
It lasted seven seasons, yeah.
If that show could be successful, Preacher could be successful.
Oh, forget it, right? Exactly.
You know?
Take away all of the ridiculousness and strip it down to a vampire and someone with supernatural powers and a very tough chick. That is the heart and soul of goddamn Preacher.
Yeah.
That can sell.
And even Hemlock Grove, which I think we've talked about briefly, like, that's, you know, I if someone challenged me and said that show sucks, I couldn't really argue, but I like it.
You liked it. Yeah. You did.
That's the fuck it. I don't care. Yeah. I'll say it. I like that. I thought it was entertaining the first two seasons.
No, totally.
I hope they make a third season, but, but, you know, you got a vampire, you got a werewolf, you got like all this like esoteric, like,
God,
you know, weird shit in there.
Religion and...
Yeah.
So what? It's a hot button. So what? It's going to be... AMC, come on. They know what they're doing over there. A lot of their shows have been... Breaking Bad had some controversy. Walking Dead isn't really controversial, but it's pretty damn violent and pretty bleak.
Oh, yeah.
Mad Men... set in the 60s, it has some controversy to it. I think it's a perfect marriage, if you ask me. I mean, I just hope it happens.
Yeah.
I mean, unfortunately, in development and the purchasing of a pilot does not always mean it's going to be on TV. That's the sad truth. But it's got some interesting people behind it. There's been no rumors of casting yet, but I know it's being written. What's happening right now is that it's being written.
Okay.
So, like True Detective Season 2 is being written right now. And casted. So casting has got to be next. It's got to be.
Yeah, man. Jesse Custer, man. Who the hell would you get to play that guy?
Could be an unknown, man. You know what? If it's unknowns across the board, I don't give a shit. As long as it's good, I don't care.
Well, I mean, Walking Dead, it wasn't the only... Michael Rooker was really the only name.
Yeah, the whole show
was
unknown.
And the guy who plays Daryl, he's like a model or something like that.
Yeah, he's...
You know, he was in Boondock Saints.
Boondock Saints, yeah. A movie I can't stand, but for some reason everybody loves.
Exactly, dude.
Right? What a dumb movie.
That movie sucks, straight up. And I'm sure there's going to be people out there going to disagree with me.
Oh, yes.
But
sorry, not that good a movie at all.
I remember a long time ago, a girl was like, oh, I love this movie. It's outstanding. You know, dark anti-hero film. You know, I love Willem Dafoe, so that was like a selling point. Oh, if you like Willem Dafoe, you're going to love this. So she loans me this DVD, and I was just like, I couldn't even watch the whole fucking thing.
I barely got through it. I just was so like waiting for this great movie that 20 people told me how great this movie was, and I went, no, it's not. This is not a great movie.
It's
a stupid movie.
You know what's better is the documentary about the clown who made that movie.
That's what I heard. I heard that there's a very interesting story about
this guy.
It's
called Blacklisted or Over... I think it's called Overnight.
What did he do? What the fuck was that about?
If you ever spent any time living in Boston like me, the whole story would make sense to you. How this guy fucked up.
I've just been there twice in the past year, and I just all I know is that I like the city a lot, and that the people there are cool, and that they mosh. That's all I know.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, you know, there is always this thing about bands from Boston being cursed because they get to the plate and they just fail. That's kind of like how this dude, like, they're like these kind of like guys from, like, you know, maybe from the the suburbs, possibly.
Mike, I almost think that Brooklyn has a slight thing like that. But now that you put that in the perspective of Boston, it makes even more sense.
Yeah.
I feel like Brooklyn has a curse, too, but the Boston curse makes even more sense. Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's been some successful bands and musicians from Boston, but sure. No one's ever, you know, aside from like maybe the Jay Giles band or Boston or Aerosmith, but those bands
are three, like main.
But from like maybe the 80s on,
mm-hmm.
you know, you got like the Lemonheads, you know, Juliana Hatfield.
Right. Was there, okay, aside from Aerosmith, in even the metal hard rock world, there's who the fuck is from Boston? Nobody.
And there are bands. There are good bands.
Like, New York has its share. L.A. has it. Like, yeah. Even from hair metal, the thrash metal. Hardly anyone was from Boston. Only Living Witness is not a hair metal band or thrash metal band. They're kind of their own thing.
Yeah.
But they're like an anomaly, really. They're like like an anomaly.
The Mighty Mighty Bosstones are
right.
Like a joke band, kind of, I guess. Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, whatever. Like not people a lot argue of me bands. About that. Blood for Blood made it very big in the hardcore world. And then things obviously happened, but I see what you're saying. That's
So it's like, but in like the major world of like musicians and artists and shit, you know, like guys like Evan Dando, they get to the plate.
It got to, right.
He could have been like Kurt Cobain.
A certain point, but he wasn't.
And he just failed,
right,
you know.
Right.
And then like the same thing with like Letters to Cleo and all these other pop bands. Like they have that one hit and they just fucking fade away.
I get it.
They never were able to really maintain it. So keeping that sort of consciousness,
mm-hmm.
if you watch this documentary, which I believe is called Overnight. It's like a group of these like guys who are probably not the smartest dudes, you know. This guy writes, I haven't seen this in a while. He writes the script for Boondock Saints and he mails it to some fucking guy in Hollywood. And then he gets a development deal.
Wow. Right?
So he moves out to L.A. with him and all of his cronies, you know, these like losers from like wherever, Saugus or where the fuck he's from. And little by little, like, he just sabotages his whole shit. You know, it's like, he's in a band. So he gets this major, like, studio deal, like, development deal. His band gets signed to a major label to score the movie, right? And the whole thing just falls apart because he's a fucking asshole. That's why. You know, he's like, I'm untouchable. I'm just going to show up drunk.
Like, self-sabotaging kind of thing?
Yeah, he's like, I'm just going to be a hooligan, you know?
Mm.
And, you know, maybe if you're, you know, Johnny Depp or something like that, you can smash up a hotel room and, you know, nothing happens to you.
Right.
But if you're a guy, like, making his first film and his band's making their first album, no one's going to feel that, you know? And little by little, people are going to withdraw from your thing, you know? And that's exactly what happened to him.
And this was the director of the movie?
The writer, director.
Wow, interesting.
Creative force behind it. And then, so, you know, all the shit went away and they made the movie on an independent budget and they got Willem Dafoe involved somehow.
Yeah, it became big on DVD. It became big on home video. It wasn't big theatrically.
That movie sucks though.
Mm.
And I'm not surprised because those guys who made the film kind of suck too. So fuck it, you know? What do you want from me? You know, I'm not surprised the movie sucks because the guys on the movie and they made it are a bunch of idiots.
Did they make a sequel? Isn't there Boondock Saints 2?
It could be, man.
I think so.
Like, I don't care enough about it to like fucking know if there was a sequel. You know, but there you have it. The documentary is riveting.
I want to see that. Yeah, now I want to see that. Okay.
Yeah, it's like they have like a lot of, you know, they tried to document because the guy thought he was going to be this great success. So, you know, they filmed the whole thing. They filmed, you know, they worked at a bar. They flew out to L.A. They rented a house. They got this office. Like the fucking Weinbergs gave them this, you know, Weinsteins gave them all this money to develop this film. And they have a pool hall. They bought a bar. The what's his name? Gary Busey's son started hanging out with him.
Jake Busey
starts showing up. But the interesting thing though is like you start seeing like how you know, the word gets out that these guys are like these, you know, bad boys from the East Coast coming out here and they're gonna be like they're gonna fuck everyone up and do this, you know, major thing. And then all these like actors start hanging out with them because they want a part, you know?
Right.
And how just fucking like weak and like self-serving all these cunts are that are out there. And it just,
I definitely want to see this stuff.
Yeah. All these like sort of very B-level guys like start like hanging out with these dudes and they're like, oh yeah, you know, here's my headshot, like whatever, you know, like this fucking bullshit. And, yeah, I don't know where all this vitriol is coming from, man. I'm pretty relaxed tonight, too.
Yeah, Mike's getting upset.
I'm getting all, like, wound up by this thing. But I think maybe it's because these guys got handed this golden opportunity and just fucked it up.
Yeah.
So,
anyway, such is the way of the world.
I recommend the documentary,
okay.
And maybe as a curiosity, if you're like clean your apartment one day, you can put the movie on and kind of keep it in the background, you know.
Huh.
You know, or if you're reading Rue Morgue magazine and you like want to watch that.
Do you have the new issue with the ill-fated Green Inferno on the cover?
No. Did that come out yet?
I think it did. I can't find that issue anywhere.
I don't think it's out yet.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like, because it's like the January 15th issue.
No, not January 15 already. No, because the Halloween one's coming out and it's got an alien cover. It's got a H.R. Giger tribute cover.
Once again, I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about then.
No,
I thought that I'm not sure.
I think it just came out. Right. I'm having trouble finding it too. Shit.
Yeah.
I hate when that happens.
I just subscribed to Rue Morgue magazine.
Oh, see, I'm going to have to just bite the bullet and do that.
You know what, man? All the money I've spent on that magazine over the years, that's a $10 magazine.
Yeah, $10.
That's like $120, or it's 100 and a, what, 11 or 10? Because only, I think 11 issues come out a year.
Yes, right.
They so it's like $110 a year just buying that shit at the newsstand or the comic shop or whatever. So I subscribed for a year for like $70.
That's worth it.
It's totally worth it. I'm like, do it. I'd rather
get it early. It's like subscribing to Decibel. You get a little early, you get it. I subscribe.
And I won't miss anything. And I mean, I used to put it in my box. I had them put it in my box in Midtown. But, you know, I'd rather hang on to that extra $30 or, you know, $30, $40 and keep it, you know, I'll have it go out to dinner. Nice dinner for myself.
Totally.
You know, but yeah, so I don't know why I don't have that in my possession,
I went to look for it in Midtown like twice one time. It's just like the movie itself. It's just not here.
Yeah.
There's absolutely nothing new on Green Inferno. There's no new update. There's no new release date. I check it literally every couple of days. There's nothing. One person put something on IMDb about a November release. No, it's being shown somewhere in November, film festival. It's not coming out in November.
I'm actually really looking forward to seeing that if it ever gets released.
Yeah.
And I'm not an Eli Roth fan.
No, you're not.
You know?
I like it more than you.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you. Some people are starting to think this is all made up to get hype around the movie, but I don't think so. You don't make posters and ads and plan for a movie to come out.
Not in this day and age.
No, not in this day and age.
Yeah, everyone's counting every cent that you spend on things.
Yeah, this is real. It's really delayed.
Yeah, I don't know why though.
Yeah, that is the weirdest part. The non full explanation about that company, that the money, and I don't understand it. You would think he himself would be able to get it into the goddamn major cities. I mean, Jesus Christ. But maybe it's not his... Maybe it is like a production company issue. I mean, who knows?
Are you a fan of Kevin Smith's?
I am, but I have not seen Red State. And I heard that this new one is horrendous. I read nothing but bad reviews on it.
I've heard so many... Everything I've read has been all over the map. Mm. I'm definitely going to see it.
Oh, I want to see it. Yeah, I want to see it.
100%.
Yeah.
Red State was tremendous. I thought it was great.
I'm going to make a point to see Red State.
I saw it in the theater.
Yeah, I remember.
I drove down to Jersey to see it.
Yep.
Even though it was playing in New York, I wanted to fucking see it in New Jersey. You know?
I love Kevin. Look, how can people our age not like Kevin Smith, honestly?
I'm not a fan of all of his films.
No, I think Zack and Mary was the biggest letdown ever. I felt like he had an opportunity to push the envelope.
Yeah.
He had everything lined up and didn't even come close to pushing an envelope. That's what I thought.
Mallrats, Clerks.
Love Mallrats. Mallrats
is probably my favorite.
Clerks 2. I kind of enjoyed Clerks 2. Some people thought it was an abomination. I actually enjoyed Clerks 2. I enjoyed it. I want to see those dudes again. I like those characters.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And I'm a fan of his...
Chasing Amy's a great movie. Dogma is a great movie.
Yeah.
He has more hits than misses. Absolutely.
Definitely. There's a cop movie, which I didn't see.
Oh, Copland. Yeah.
Cop Out. Yeah.
I heard a lot of bad things.
Is that the one with Bruce Willis?
Yeah, shot in Bay Ridge, a lot of it. And
yeah.
I heard it's a weird story behind that movie, how it's not his movie at all, and it's, I don't know.
Apparently, Bruce Willis is an asshole, according to
Kevin Smith. Yeah, I heard a mix of Bruce treated him like crap, and a mix of he treated Bruce like crap, but I have a funny feeling it was more of Bruce treating him like crap.
Yeah, because, you know, Bruce, I think I don't know anything about the man, but my impression from, you know, all removed to whatever degree I am here is like that he kind of convinced himself that he's the guy that he plays in his movies.
Yeah, and I think that he's was expecting very top shelfy kind of treatment and top shelfy everything, and I heard that he wasn't really getting that. and he was kind of upset about that, and blah, blah, blah. Like, I heard all these things about him on it, so.
Yeah, so I've never been a fan of his.
I know. The Die Hard, yeah, it's cool. You know what I liked? I liked goddamn Moonlighting before he was a dick. I liked that show, the TV show with him and Cybill Shepherd.
I'll even go as far as to say his role in Pulp Fiction.
Pulp Fiction is awesome. Yeah,
sucked.
No,
I fucking hated him in that movie.
Well, happy 20th anniversary, Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, great movie.
Unbelievable. Saw it in the theater.
I love that movie, but I don't like him.
Really?
Yeah. I don't like him in that movie. I don't like him as a boxer. He doesn't have the right shoulders for a boxer.
It's one of his last movies with hair, Mike.
Huh. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. He just doesn't have the. I'm like, that guy's not a boxer. He doesn't have, like, the shoulder development to be a boxer, in my opinion.
Interesting.
Anyway, whatever. But that's my own personal thing against Bruce Willis. I like Mel Gibson more than I like Bruce Willis.
Oh, now wow.
And he's a controversial guy.
I like him, too. He makes me laugh, Mel Gibson. I don't know. Something about it makes me laugh. The new Mel Gibson makes me laugh.
I thought he was great in the 80s.
Yeah.
You know?
He's kind of nutty, but very entertaining. Yeah.
You know, but anyway, that's another interesting thing. Finally, the soundtrack for Beyond the Black Rainbow is out.
Yes, I have a story.
Go ahead, man.
I ordered it. I ordered the vinyl. Nowhere on that website did it say that you have to wait because they ran out of it. I get an email a week after I ordered it saying, "We have sold through the pressing, and you're going to have to wait for the next pressing." And I went, wait a minute, it didn't say that on the website when I ordered it. And then I went to the website and they showed me where it said it now. I went, well, yeah, it says it now, but the day I ordered it, it did not say that it was not available. So they sent me the MP3s for it or whatever, but I still have no idea when I'm getting my vinyl.
Yeah, mine's on back order, too.
Back order, exactly.
You know, that's fine.
Hopefully we get it soon.
I have the MP3s.
Yep.
The soundtrack's amazing. I love it.
Yeah.
I've been waiting ever since. It feels like my whole life I've been waiting for that to come out. But that's eventually it'll show up and I'll be happy. It'll be one of those things.
It's a surprise mail. There you go.
It's a surprise mail.
It will be a surprise mail.
You know, when you pre-order something and then it shows up and it's like your birthday.
Because from what I understand about all the vinyl pressing plants right now, it's going to be a surprise mail. Yeah. Everything is like delayed all the time, apparently.
Yeah.
It takes a while for everything to happen.
Well, you know, vinyl is like a massive thing now. Everyone's making vinyls these days.
It's on fire. Vinyl.
Yeah.
And, and of course, you know, the horror soundtracks on vinyl is very hot, so, of course.
So that's the episode.
Yes, this wraps up Necromaniacs Volume 5, the September edition.
Yeah, and we will be doing a Halloween.
Yes, episode. We're going to do a good Halloween one. We're not going to reveal what it is yet, but it's going to be a good one. We're torn between some ideas.
Yeah, well stay tuned. Check out our Facebook page and you'll get an inkling as to what we're going to be doing.
Remember, facebook.com/necromaniacspodcast.
And do me a favor, you know, give us a couple more likes.
Yeah.
And and also if you have any comments or anything, feel free to hit us up on there.
Or you think that we suck for thinking Boondock Saints suck, whatever. Yeah. You know, it's fine.
Yeah, you know.
All right, thank you all very much. We'll see you next time.
See you next time.
technically. I mean, there's some new extras, but not like a ton.
Yeah. There's also a standalone documentary that I have that has a lot of the, like the flesh wounds and mm-hmm. the truth behind the Texas Chainsaw Massacre and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah. The coolest thing about it is the fact that it's a double DVD, double Blu-ray together. And it's all the same. It's you know, you're not shit out of luck if you don't have a Blu-ray player. You're getting exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
And there's two other versions of this too, actually. There's a standalone two DVD of it with that kind of cool cover of him outside the truck.
It's like
the new poster. It's like the 40th anniversary poster. And the third version is the insert that came in there, the truck on Gorgon Video. It's $100.
Holy shit.
Yeah, this puppy here. I don't know if it's do you have that thingy? You
might have fell out in my
It's from Gorgon Video only. And the other extra on that is a conversation between I think Toby Hooper and fucking Cronenberg.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, let's buy five more versions. I already have three versions of this movie, by the way. This is my third dip.